ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Molman. This is the Mind View Matters Radio Network, and I see we've already got somebody in the queue that wants to speak, so I'm going to bring them on right away because, well, that way I won't get interrupted in my train of thought tonight. So, here we go. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello, Ken. This is Don. How are you?
Hey, Don, I'm doing just fine, sir. How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine, except the debacle that happened just recently when they completely caved in to Obama. I might have been naive, but I had great hopes for the shutdown. And I mean, it's bad enough when the left, you know, claims victory and Obama got everything he wanted, but it seemed that a lot of the Republicans and conservatives say that there was some very big mistakes that happened. Now, do you see what, in a sense, happened here, what mistakes were made, or maybe this is kind of setting the stage for a victory down the line? I mean, I think there's going to be other shutdowns in the future, and I think that this was a battle was waged more smarter than what Newt Gingrich did in the 90s. So I haven't been following all the, you know, the people who've been writing on this. So I'd like to hear what you have to say and where you got you know, your input from.
Well, Don, I appreciate that. Yeah, and actually that's going to be one of the overarching themes tonight. You know, the shutdown, just to kind of rewind for folks that haven't necessarily been paying attention, which I don't know if you're listening to the show, chances are good you are paying attention, but the shutdown did end this week. And quite honestly, Don, I don't know any other way other than to classify this as a Republican defeat. You know, they took a massive beating in public opinion polls for the shutdown itself. And they had basically, the Republican Party had basically bottomed out. I mean, they couldn't take any more of a beating than they had already taken. And I think we talked about this on the show last week, that at this point it kind of put the ball into Obama's court. And Obama's ratings, you know, were starting to go down as well. And, you know, the Republicans took the initial brunt of it, but the Democrats, and specifically Obama, was taking the secondary brunt, if you will. You know, the people who were losing out after the Republicans took their beating were the Democrats and Obama. And I think it was a huge, huge tactical, I mean, just from a purely political standpoint, a huge tactical error to walk away with nothing. I mean, nothing. They got nothing out of this deal. And there's been talk about McConnell ended up with some sort of earmark for some dam down around the river further west, you know.
But well, McConnell's in trouble,
is,
you know that.
Well, yeah, and I've seen those polls too.
Yeah.
McConnell is in trouble, and that doesn't necessarily surprise me. I've said from the outset that, you know, the Grimes campaign, their worst fear is that McConnell gets beat in the primary and that Bevin wins, because by default, Don, we know this state by default is a red state when it comes to federal elections, with the exception of Louisville. And you could make the case that the Lexington area, the bluegrass region, kind of wavers on the cusp. The other four congressional districts are solidly Republican. And the presidential race is solidly Republican. And so to have McConnell down a handful of points, it's not a huge margin, but there's been several polls that have all shown that McConnell loses to Grimes. And the Grimes campaign at this point has to be just hoping and praying that Bevin doesn't succeed and that they are facing McConnell, because McConnell's got a 20-something year history, whereas Bevin is a complete unknown, which – quite honestly, no offense to Ms. Grimes, but she basically is as well. Yes, she's won a statewide election. Great. But in the grand scheme of things, she's a relative unknown. She doesn't have a lot of name recognition throughout the rest of the state, so or throughout the state as far as what she's accomplished or whatever. my big shock to this whole thing, honestly, was that this ended. I honestly was genuinely shocked. The Republicans chose to take nothing and just take the political beating that they had taken and taken the loss rather than, hey, you know, I mean, they were literally in a position where they could have held out forever and not been hurt any more politically than they had been already. I don't really understand the tactic or the mindset of those who have decided to pass this grand bargain, this grand deal. It's not like the Republican Party's favorability went up at all. It did not. Obama's favorability went up as a result of the deal, which, you know, that's from a political standpoint a huge mistake. I don't get it, man. I don't know. What are your thoughts on it? I'm curious to find out what you think.
I think that the Democratic noise machine was in full operation and the Republicans made no corresponding effort. I just follow Facebook myself, and there were, you know, a couple of groups that were, you know, like every couple hours they would put some type of invective petition, you know, going after Cruz and, the Tea Party and all of that. And there were like, you know, maybe a couple of libertarians or Tea Party people that were responding to this, but they got hundreds and thousands of people to post on Facebook. So what they probably did is send out constant emails to the entire move-on list and all the various left lists and say, just keep sending emails to all these Republicans and make, you know, and create the impression that everybody hates the shutdown. I mean, I think that one thing that the Democrats lost and lost really big, but, you know, we're not going to see this immediately, is that I think the veterans now are going to permanently hate on the Democrats after closing, you know, all those sites. Truckers, of course, are going to hate them. The bikers, of course, are going to hate them, et cetera. But, you know, I mean, there might have been some people who were, shall we say, inconvenienced or got their checks late or something like that. And, you know, the Republicans were, in a sense, they were reasonable and made accommodations. But, you know, Obama took this hard line and he had, you know, the Democrats basically doing all of this noise. And there was no gesture from, let's say, the Republican Party saying, you know, to try and balance, in a sense, all of this publicity against the shutdown and, in a sense, blaming it on Obama rather than the Republicans. And that's my take on it.
Well, you know, that's the funny thing is I think that that had just kind of started to kick in. I think that people, as I mentioned, the Republicans had taken all the beating that they could take. I mean, they were down to 20-something percent support. It was upper 20%. Support. You know, at that point, you're literally talking about your core, right? The Republican core is 20-something percent. The Democratic core is 20-something percent, where literally, you know, if you had Hitler or Stalin or somebody, you know, horrible running the Republican or Democratic Party, it doesn't matter, you know, pick a party. There's a baseline of supporters that no matter what will defend their party's actions because of the whole it's our team, rah-rah team aspect. I don't think they could have taken more of a beating than they did. And I really think this is just a huge tactical error on the part of the Republican Party to not follow through. I mean, if you're going to take the beating, and they did, they took the beating. It was done. There was no more beating to be given. They couldn't lose anybody else. Why do you give in with nothing? Because that 20-something percent, there's a portion of that that now recognizes that, you know what, our team just gave up and walked away. And what that really means is that there's a core, right? As I mentioned, there's a core group of support no matter what, right? That rah-rah go team. But you start to shake loose that foundational core when you give up without getting anything at all. There is nothing. Nothing the Republicans can walk away from this situation and claim was a victory.
Well, but I think the Republicans, should have picked another point, something that was like really horrible and odious that everybody could have said, yeah, we have, we can get rid of that. A lot of people, having problems with health care and stuff. And just, let's say, all focus on that one thing, whether it's bailouts or agricultural subsidies, and just put all the weight on that, and then say, let's just fund the entire government except for those bad programs. And then, they would have the Democrats would have had a harder time forming a defense around all of that. You look, for example, what happened in previous defaults. It's always like, okay, they're going to cut out, wheelchairs for cripples, or maybe they'll stop issuing passports and visas, which basically really inconveniences people or something like that, or hurts people. And, they're not going to talk about cutting out the waste unless we actually make a focus that this is a, program, this particular program is really, really horrible, and across the board, people say, no, we don't want it. So, that's my take of it. I really haven't seen much, except that people just said that Cruz just did not have the leadership for it, even though he did something heroic. I also noticed that Rand Paul kind of stayed in the background on this one and let Cruz carry the flag. And maybe he saw that this whole thing had just no way it was going to end except Obama was going to win because he held the cards.
Maybe. I have to say that I don't think Obama held all the cards at the point that the Republicans buckled. I think the Republicans held the cards. And that's the amazing thing to me. Like I said, the Republicans had nothing to lose and everything to gain by holding their position. I mean, once the shutdown happened, the Republicans took their beating in the first few days, and there was nothing else for them to get hurt. I mean, they could not have been hurt any more than they already were. Do you agree with that? I mean, when you hit 27%,
I would have held. I would have held tough myself, but there may have been all types of other pressures in the background that we just didn't know about. That kind of thing. I mean, there might have been thousands of phone calls to their offices and, that kind of thing. Or maybe, saying, well, we're going to cut out this program for you or that program for you and all that kind of thing as, the person who controls the White House can do. What I found extremely disturbing is that there are various progressive groups out there who are actually circulating some type of petition to arrest the Republican leaders for sedition.
Yeah, whatever. I mean,
can you imagine if the Republicans had said, arrest the Democratic leaders for sedition? They would have a space painted all the Republicans as brown shirts. But they can say that kind of crap.
I don't know. I don't think that carries a hell of a lot of traction, honestly, Don. You can say lots of things. The Republicans, there are certain people in the right wing that have been really big on the bandwagon of the birth certificate stuff. There's been people in the right wing that have been real big on the impeaching him for this or that or whatever. The reality is you can talk and talk and talk, but until an action occurs, it's just talk. And to me, it is simply amazing that the Republicans are so politically inept as a party. Now, make no mistake, there were Republicans that continued to hold firm and hold the line that they weren't going to give. But, as a party, their majority did give, or at least enough of them gave, that it allowed the Democrats to, combine with their vote, get whatever, this deal through the House, which then obviously went to the Democratic Senate and passed. It's amazing to me. I don't understand what the thought process was here. I wish that I could get some insight as to what in the heck they were thinking, because it doesn't make any sense. They've already taken the political beating. There's no more beatings to be given.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, you've already taken the loss. Now you should be working towards getting your upside.
Mm-hmm.
These guys, they gave up. They just simply gave up. And,
yeah.
You know, yeah, I saw some of those messages you're talking about with the move on people and whatnot. And
yeah.
It was pretty funny because, you know, the ones I saw, because he's my congressman, is on Thomas Massey's page.
Yeah.
And on Congressman Massey's page, there were a number of people. There was obviously a very organized, concerted effort to go after Massey and, you know, basically light up his Facebook page. And the reality is none of the people who were criticizing Thomas Massey on his Facebook page were even people that lived in the state of Kentucky, much less his district.
Mm-hmm.
You were looking at people that were from California and New York and Chicago, Illinois. Well, who cares, man? They're not who you represent. And I guarantee you, or I shouldn't say guarantee, but if I had to guess, I'm going to guess the same exact people are the ones posting messages on every Republican Facebook page. You know, that it gets back to the whole organized effort. But, I mean, unless you're in Chicago or California or New York, what do you care what those people have to say? I mean, seriously, they're not your voters. They're not your constituents. They don't have a vote in your election. They're
well,
just whiners on Facebook.
Yeah, I know. Of course, a lot of people who, you know, do this kind of thing will basically look up a town in Massey's district and say that, you know, I'm from this town, and then make the phone calls. And nobody has a way of checking that. You know, they can do that. I mean, just sending an email, phone calls, of course, you know, area codes and all that.
Right.
But
on Facebook, they got smarter. You know, when they first started that effort of pushing the Facebook stuff out, you know, they weren't even trying to conceal the people that were posting the messages. It was very obvious. I mean, they would, you know, mouse over, you put the mouse cursor over their name, and it would pop up and it would say such and such from whatever, you know, Irvine, California or whatever, and it's like, whatever. And then they finally got a little smarter and started hiding that. But you could figure out based on their Facebook page, right, if you went to their page, you could look at their list of friends, and all of their friends were still, you know, open and available, and you could tell, hey, you know, these people aren't from here. They're from Illinois, and it was California, Illinois, and New York. That's it.
Yeah, well, to me, the best Republican strategist that I know of is Grover Norquist, and he said the whole thing was incompetently handled. And it seems that, you know, Rand thought that, you know, this was a winnable thing, and that he thought that, you know, the people or the media or whatever would perceive the Republicans' offer of compromise and just, you know, allow everything through except, you know, for certain things would somehow, you know, cause people to be more respectful of the Republican position. But I guess if, you know, if you live, let's say, in an environment where 99% of your feedback comes from lobbyists and loudmouth liberals who, you know, who want you to die, then, you know, some people, you know, will cave on that, especially if you look at polls. And, of course, you know, I think that there's going to have to be some in-depth polling among independents and whatever and see how people perceived all of this, because there was an obvious attempt to stampede public opinion.
Right. And I've looked at those polls, Don. I was looking at those all along. And as I mentioned last week, I mean, the Republicans had bottomed out. Make no mistake, the Republicans did take a political beating over this. You know, you had obviously almost every Democrat that was against them. You had independents was about 60-40 against the shutdown and blaming Republicans. And even some within the Republican Party were blaming the more radical factions of the Republican Party for the shutdown. You know, but that was all static. I mean, it wasn't changing anymore. There were, you know, they bottomed out, and there was nothing left to lose. And
well, McConnell made an interesting point in that, let the Obamacare, you know, thing go through, which is basically you're required to buy health insurance, and you see your health insurance premium, let's say, double as they're predicting, and he says that in itself should, you know, shoot down the Democratic position, and therefore, you know, Republicans could win House in 2014. You think that's basically what people did as a default position?
No.
Okay.
I think the problem that we have now, right,
yeah,
from a well, not we, the Republicans have now, from a
yeah,
purely political standpoint, they have taken an absolute beating over Obamacare. I mean, just
yeah,
a beating.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to get anything out of it. I think that they've soured the independents towards their position. And
mm-hmm,
at this point now, it's really, you know, and I really do believe Obamacare is going to not turn out well. And we've seen
yeah,
some of those stories come out where people are like, oh, well, I was all for this. And wait a second, why do all of a sudden do I have to pay more? Wait, I thought this was going to be
right,
free, right? And it's not.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, anybody who's under the illusion that you're going to get free health care, I mean, really? I mean, there's no such
mm-hmm,
thing as free. There, you know,
mm-hmm,
and that's one of the things, Don, I've been hammering in this whole thing is the old libertarian phrase of, you know, there ain't no such thing as a free lunch. You know, there ain't no
well,
such thing
that's
as free
what
health
I'm saying
care.
Is,
I mean, this has a real
that,
cost.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, people, for example, are going to see their their hours cut from 40 to 29. Their health insurance premiums are going to double, companies going out of business or just dropping health care completely or going, you know, that kind of thing. And I think
sure,
that may have been, in a sense, one of the reasons that the Republicans caved is that, you know, let people just, you know, see this right now. And then the backlash, you know, will help the Republicans in 2014. I mean, do you think that, in a sense, is a from a practical political point of view, is going to work for the Republicans in 2014?
I don't think it does. You know, Don, I've talked about this on the show. I've talked about it on other shows on this network. I've talked about it on
yeah,
other shows outside
yeah,
of this network. You know, the
yeah,
reality is that independents especially – but there's this
uh-huh,
new mood of, in general, just hating on Democrats and Republicans in general. And a big part of that is fueled by the lack of solutions being put forth by these parties. Everybody
mm-hmm,
likes to talk about, you know, the Democrats actually do a pretty good job of spinning this, that the Republicans
mm-hmm,
have no plan as far as, well, if you repeal Obamacare, what are you going to replace it with? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And,
right,
you know, my answer is really simple. My answer is you replace it with liberty. Right? I mean, that's
mm-hmm,
that's the easy answer. But
mm-hmm,
the Republicans have never been able to answer that question. They have
mm-hmm,
only been focusing on the negative and not on the positive. The
mm-hmm,
general mood of the voting public out there right now is that both Democrats and Republicans suck. I mean, that is
mm-hmm,
literally the mood out there. There has never
mm-hmm,
been a time in our history that I'm aware of that the general voting populace has been so negative towards both Republicans and Democrats. It's quite simply, it's astounding. And we
mm-hmm,
see this in the Libertarian Party here in the state
mm-hmm,
and around the U.S.
Mm-hmm,
that our numbers have
mm-hmm,
jumped up significantly. We're also starting to see a rise in the number of new fledgling political parties that are out there. I spoke to somebody in South Carolina that's starting up something they call the American Party,
mm-hmm,
that is kind of almost a moderate party, if you will, where it's that centrist kind of moderate thing.
Schwarzenegger and Bloomberg are talking about running. As a ticket.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. And, of course, there's also the thing, too, about Ventura and Howard Stern. And, I mean, to
yeah,
me, yeah, yeah. I mean, these guys, you know, people who are doing that, in a way, it's for them, it's a kind of a showbiz thing. But, you know, there might be an element of seriousness about that, too, because they can create, you know, like some votes that can move around back and forth, you know, and they get you know, paid off or rewarded
sure,
with ego points or something there too.
Well, there's no doubt.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that Bloomberg wants it. I mean, they created.
Yeah.
He was the driving factor, the silent voice behind the Americans Elect Party that
yeah,
propped up what's that been now, 2 years ago, a year ago, whatever it was, whenever they cropped up, the reality was, and I knew it didn't smell right from the get-go, the reality is that was set up as a vehicle for Bloomberg to get on the ballot. That's what that was. Make no mistake, Bloomberg is a horrible human being when it comes to setting policy. He is all about controlling every single aspect of your personal life. And why in the hell Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's not quite that bad, would be looking to team up with Bloomberg, on top of the fact that technically he can't run for that office because he is not a natural-born citizen. He cannot be vice president because he is legally not allowed to be president. Why Schwarzenegger would be joining forces with somebody like Bloomberg, I have no idea. But
well, Bloomberg has money.
Well,
and
there's that.
You know, and Schwarzenegger looks upon it as, well, this is another movie I can have a starring role in it. And what he can do is just say, well, there's a precedent for me running. I can just say my father's from Kenya.
Yeah, well, you know, the
Cruz
thing
could
is,
say the same
there's
thing
no,
too.
Well, and they can make those claims. But, you know, the reality is that when it comes to Obama and his birth certificate and all that stuff, I mean, make no mistake, the birth certificate that they released out of the White House was a clear and obvious forgery. And I'm not a birther, you know, per se, but, man, I can look at that and see, you can see where it's been photoshopped. I mean, it's very, very obvious. It's the worst Photoshop job ever. And I don't know if that was intentional. I don't know why they did that. Whatever. The point is, though, that there are still questions. There's no definitive proof that Obama is not an American citizen, right? Whereas Schwarzenegger is definitive. It's definitive.
Yeah,
he himself has said that he's not a natural-born citizen. So I don't know that Schwarzenegger is going to go very far. You know, as far as Ventura and Howard Stern, you know, I didn't hear what came out of their little meeting that they were supposed to have. But, you know, the reality is, and this is sad but true, is that that ticket wouldn't be viewed as legitimate anyway, right?
Yeah,
that,
well,
that's not
I don't know whether you're,
that,
you're aware of this, but, you know, Town Hall, which is a website of National Review, which is a flagship you know, magazine of the conservative movement, put together a poll in which they showed 20 possible Republican candidates for 2016. They did not mention Rand Paul. However, they had a write-in available. And then the write-in, Rand, without mentioning Rand Paul, has won that particular poll.
Interest.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they did the same thing to Ron 4 years ago, but, you know, it's just that they're trying to figure, like, we have to stop Rand Paul and, you know, we'll just find anybody who could possibly, you know, draw votes away from him. But the thing that they don't do, which to me would be the most obvious strategy, is to invite Gary Johnson to be in the Republican debates.
Yeah, well, and I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, Gary Johnson has committed the worst sin ever. You know, you can go from a Republican to a Democrat or a Democrat to a Republican and flip-flop all day and night. And the major parties, they'll forgive you for that. I mean, there'll be consternation or whatever. But as long as there's something in it for them, they'll forgive you for it. But there is no forgiveness when it comes to a Democrat that runs as a Green or a Republican that runs as a Libertarian or whatever.
Well,
you know,
Ron
the major
Paul
parties
was a,
don't forget,
you know,
and they don't forgive.
Well, Ron Paul was a Libertarian Party candidate, and he was allowed to be in the Republican primaries. I heard the reason he was allowed in the debates is because Nancy Reagan liked him because he was one of the early supporters of Reagan. Now, I'm sure if Gary Johnson was offered, let's say, a place in the Republican debates, he would accept it. And in a way, it would be good for us because, you know, Gary would be a guarantee that Rand would not slip on key issues. And, you know, so, you know, that could happen. And some of the, you know, people like Rove would say, well, you know, Gary's just going to take away votes from Rand Paul, so let him in, you know, that kind of thing. But in a way, it strengthens our position because if we have more than one libertarian candidate in the race, people will perceive us as somewhat larger than they might otherwise see us. So that's the way I see it. What I'm thinking, though, is that in 2014, we could knock out Lindsey Graham and maybe a couple of other rhinos, and maybe some of our people can, you know, can get elected or something like that. The question is that, you know, who are those new candidates going to be, where they're going to get their money, and, you know, is the neocon resistance to us finally collapsing as it seems to be doing right now?
I don't think that it is, and that's one of the things, and we're going to take a break here in just a minute, but one of
sure.
the things that I'm seeing now is that, you know, I've been predicting for years that the inevitable result of the Tea Party and a number of these movements is that the there's going to be a purge, you know, a la 1969, where
mm-hmm.
the Republican Party starts purging out the elements that are within, that are trying to reform from within and are not congruent with the Republican establishment. And I think that we're starting to see that now. There's been some talk about the polls and how the Republican establishment is turning against the Tea Party. And, you know, I think that that's what we're going to see. And I think that from a purely political standpoint, it's a huge mistake for the Republicans to start pushing this avenue. I think that it will cause them.
If they
to
do
bleed
that,
all
they
supporters.
Will not win in 2016, and they'll lose a lot of support in the House and the Senate. And to me, it's some, you know, what do the big donors say? I mean, do they say we'll work with them, the Tea Party and the Libertarians? And, you know, I mean, the Kochs could, you know, in a sense, stand up for us or something, possibly, you know, like that. Or, you know, but it's interesting. The articles about the split in the GOP do not mention libertarians. They basically
yeah.
say that, you know, the Christian right is basically versus the establishment.
See,
and,
but I don't
which
even,
to me
that's
is
not even
bullshit.
What I'm seeing. The polls that I'm seeing are Tea Party versus the establishment, because, you know, the Republican Party is basically made up of three general factions. You've got your establishment,
mm-hmm.
you've got your Christian right, and then you've got the liberty-ish type people. And,
right.
you know, the liberty-ish type people are the ones that are definitely getting the headlines. They're the ones that are definitely causing all the ruckus. And
mm-hmm.
there's been a push but now to try to discredit, discount the Tea Party ish, the liberty-ish type people
mm-hmm.
within the Republican Party. The funny thing is, and I've done the math on these things, you know, if the Tea Party gets pushed out of the Republican Party, and even if half of those people just say, forget it then, we're done, we're not going to deal with these Republicans anymore, to hell with you, and even if they
mm-hmm.
just don't vote, right, they don't go start another party, they don't go somewhere else, they just quit being involved and quit voting, right? The Republican Party's
mm-hmm.
done. The
yeah.
Republican Party, as a coalition party, has those three core groups. And if you shake loose even half of those pieces, the whole thing falls apart. And
mm-hmm.
I think that it is an interesting scenario. And, Don, I'm going to put you on hold here while I wrap up and get us into the break. I think it's a scenario where the Republican Party is caught in a nasty catch-22 and one of their own creation. I mean, make no mistake, they've created this coalition that they have today, and for a number of different reasons. But the reality is this coalition, as it stands today, is in serious trouble. And, you know, I actually think it may be a very positive thing. If the Republican Party were to fall down and die and fall over and crumble, there are other coalitions, there are other groups out there today that are not represented by either Republicans or Democrats. And that is an increasing number of people every single day, because you have people, the independents, as they're labeled today, are increasing in number. And they're not really independent. It's just that they're not Republicans or Democrats. And so if a new coalition party was formed that spoke more to the quote-unquote independents. If you go out and look at what independents really are, they are fiscally conservative and socially tolerant. They're libertarians. Now, they may not be extreme libertarians. They may be very moderate libertarians, but they are libertarians nonetheless. And we're in a situation now where everything's changing, everything is up in the air, and anything can happen. So the reality is there's not enough organization behind these independent groups to particularly cause something to occur. But if the Republicans are dumb enough to try to shake loose the Tea Party folks out of their party, or at least a portion of them, they're shooting themselves in the foot. They will fall down, and they will die. They will falter and flounder and die. And, you know, people like Ted Cruz, people like Rand Paul, people like Thomas Massey are going to be people that, while they may agree with those independents on certain things, they're going to be the outliers. They're not going to be, quote-unquote, Republicans. And if you ask establishment Republicans, they'll tell you Rand Paul is not a Republican. They'll just say he's not a Republican. They'll tell you that Thomas Massey is not a Republican, despite the fact that they are Republicans, are lifelong Republicans, and have only been Republicans. Because when it comes to being a Republican, they do not believe that Republicans are libertarians. If you ask the establishment Republican Party folks what libertarians are, do they belong in the Republican or Democratic Party, they will say that they do not belong in the Republican Party, that they are not, capital R, Republicans. And that attitude right there, if it is pervasive enough, it will be the death of the Republican Party. We're way over for a break. Folks, we'll be back here in just a few minutes. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. If you'd like to call in about this or other Liberty topics going on tonight, I should mention you can do so by calling area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. Folks, we'll be back here in just a few moments. Hang tight.
So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. It is Sunday night, and we're here every Sunday night from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And we always invite call in and talk about issues. And Don, who is a regular listener, quasi-regular caller, has called in to talk about the issue that I wanted to talk about anyway tonight, which is the shutdown, the Republican cave-in on the shutdown. I just don't understand politically why in the world they gave up when they did and got absolutely nothing out of it. I just don't see the political benefit to it. And I'm bringing Don back on the air here. Don, you're back on. I just don't see it, Don. Help me understand. I mean, do you see any benefit whatsoever to the Republican cave on the shutdown? Is there any benefit at all from their side politically?
I think that since Rove and his company have been discredited and nobody listens to them, that there really is no directing voice within the GOP. And even the talk show crowd, is getting very angry at the whole situation. And people are turning against the neocons. I've seen evidence of that. But there has been no voice of leadership saying this is what the Republicans should do, and then, you know, that we see them doing it. And I think a lot of it is that there's a perception that Obama is holding all the chips, and not just because he's president, but as you know, the media is overwhelmingly pro-Democrat and pro-big government.
Sure.
So,
well, specifically pro Obama too. I mean, they're very specifically pro Obama.
Yeah. And I think this is one of the reasons, by the way, that Obama, you know, gave up on the attack of Syria, and Holder said we're not going to go after marijuana people because they wanted to marshal all their troops to basically, for this Obamacare fight, but. From what I understand is that they can always back off and, let's say, go again full bore on the drug war or even attack Syria. And even Nation magazine has said all of this. And, it's just, we're kind of waiting for Obama to think that, yes, I have enough cards to basically pull everything that I want right now.
I think he has the cards now. The Republicans took their damage in the shutdown, and they lost a lot of political capital shutting down the government, which, again, and I've seen this phrase used, it wasn't really a shutdown at all. It was a slowdown. Mm-hmm. In fact, now the Democrats are out beating the drum about how the shutdown actually cost extra money. Now, in theory, that should never happen. The law says that they're not allowed to incur extra expenses during a shutdown. But, we saw the things with the World War II Memorial and the parks and all that stuff where they spent extra money to keep the public out of those things. And I think that that's, first of all, very much a violation of the spirit of the law that they were supposedly following, which was not to incur additional costs, which makes sense, right? I mean, if you're in a shutdown, you shouldn't be incurring additional costs, right? There's
and all
no
the bureaucrats that were laid off are going to get paid for it, and of course they did no work, so that means they'll probably be assigned to work overtime, which of course will mean more expenses. I mean, they're always going to interpret this as an another excuse to spend money, et cetera, and of course they'll blame the Republicans for this.
And politically, politically that makes sense. I mean, they should be out beating the drum about how the Republicans are causing all this extra money. And then Tea Party folks, the ones, whether they're more extreme Tea Partiers or more moderate Tea Party-minded people, are going to be looking at the Republicans like, what a bunch of just jokers. I mean, you've given political capital. It's not even that. It's not that they've given political capital to Obama. It's that they spent all of their political capital and got nothing. And the only one with any political capital at this point that's left are the Democrats. They're the only ones that have any political capital left. And so if you thought repealing Obamacare was going to happen, good luck. If you thought that all these other miscellaneous issues out there that the Republicans were going to fight Obama on, good luck. The political capital is spent. It's gone. It's gone. There's none.
Yeah.
There's none left. And go ahead.
Yeah, well, I see posts from some of these people that are saying, you know, Obama has only asked for debt increases only twice, while Reagan, you know, did 15, and they say that Obama has raised spending less than any other president and all that kind of thing. And it's
as
just,
a percentage,
you know,
not as a dollar. Yeah, and they play games with that. It's as a percentage, not as in dollars, right? I mean, you look at the debt that was incurred over the course of the Reagan administration, and the total debt incurred was not even – I'm trying to remember the numbers now, but if it was $1 trillion, that was the high side of it. Whereas, you know, we're currently racking up debt to the tune of about $2.5 to $3 trillion a year. It's all about percentages. And, you know, and I used this phrase when I was running for office. You know, there's lies, there's dang lies, and then there's statistics. And the reality is you can make the numbers look whatever they are, but the reality is we are racking up record amounts of debt, dollars, not as percentage, but by dollars. We are definitely racking up massive amounts of debt. As far as from a percentage standpoint, even that is significant. The percentages are only lower compared to the Bush administration, who racked up massive amounts of debt fighting two wars, right? And, you know, we really, despite what's said, we're still in Afghanistan. We have contractors there now instead of the military. Whatever. We're paying for it. Doesn't matter. We're still in Iraq. Again, contractors versus military. Who cares? It's still getting paid for by us. And the situation in both of those countries, neither one's getting any better. I mean, there's nothing that you can do to make those countries better. They're just what they are. And so all the while, and this is one of the big things happening now, is we continue to spend all this money on Iraq, Afghanistan, foreign aid, all these things, while our internal infrastructure continues to suffer. Don, there in Louisville, up here in northern Kentucky, we need bridges, right?
Yeah.
And for various reasons, whatever, let's not get into all the nuances, but the reality is that the state of Kentucky is now looking at using tolls to fund these bridges. All the while, every time there's a press release about, I think it was Pakistan now, they're sending $1.8 billion to Pakistan for aid. Well, damn, I would buy the bridge up here in northern Kentucky. You know, they build the NSA Super Center out in Utah, right? Well, hell, that thing would have built the bridge in Louisville. I mean, you know, we're spending money on things that most Americans don't want. And if the Republicans had been smarter about how they did the shutdown, they should have pointed out that the shutdown, as annoying as it was, is an asinine shutdown because we're shutting down the parts of government that, in general, people don't have a big problem with. Parks and memorials and that kind of thing. People don't care about that stuff. They're like, eh, whatever, you know. I mean, even the fiscal conservatives can't be real angry about, you know, oh, my gosh, we have a World War II memorial. Why do we have that? People don't get mad about that stuff. What they get mad about is the IRS abuses. What they get mad about is sending money to other countries when we can't fund and pay for our own infrastructure. These are the things that they should have been focusing on that no one ever focuses on because, as you mentioned, the neocons within the Republican Party support the exact same thing. They support sending money to these other countries and nation building and all this garbage that we can neither afford nor has it ever proven effective.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had seen a shutdown of those type of things, you shut down the NSA, you shut down the foreign aid, you shut down the foreign wars, people would have been, yeah, hey, great. You know, they've been clapping.
Yeah,
congratulations.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah.
Shut that stuff down. And let's
uh-huh.
focus on what's important to us here in the country. And I'm just speaking from a purely pragmatic standpoint. What's important to people in America, here in the country, what do they care about? Being able to get to work, being able to get their paycheck. That's the kind of stuff that people care about. And so if the shutdown had been a shutdown, in many ways, it was a shutdown of everything that didn't need to be shut down in the eyes of the public, and everything that should have been shut down was continued onward. And that's kind of the backwards part about the shutdown is that the majority – I would, and I don't have polls to back this up, but I would, based on the mood of the country and the people I've talked to and independents and even Republicans and Democrats, everyone agrees that the things they shut down were the things that – we're like, well, wait, we don't care about that stuff. That's not what we're worried about. We're worried about X, Y, Z, and ABC, and those things are still chugging along.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The people that are, shall we say, that we value as predictors in this society are the people who are basically who advise on decisions, people who run the various stock funds, and as you know, the various names like Jim Rogers and Schiff and people like that. We know them as gold bugs and as Austrians. And they're claiming that in the next year or so that we're going to see a very big hit on the economy, that the dollar may no longer be the world's reserve currency, et cetera. The thing is that I do know that these people do survive on gloom and doom and all of that, and, you know, I'm okay with that. The question is that do you – in terms of, let's say, people who are not necessarily libertarian, is there, let's say, a kind of a consensus in the larger investment community that, in a sense, we are in deep shit right now?
Well, there's no doubt that we're in trouble. I mean, in general,
yeah.
everyone out there, in their gut, everyone
yeah.
knows our
yeah.
economy has never recovered from that recession that started in the mid-2008. It bottomed
yeah.
out in 2009, and we've actually got studies that show that 95% of Americans, the quote-unquote bottom 95%, which is a heck of a lot of the bottom, never recovered. Only the top 5% have seen any sort of economic recovery, and that's only been through the stock market. But the reality is, and this is the ugly thing, even they technically haven't seen a recovery, right?
Mm-hmm.
What they've seen
right.
is they have been able to stay flat while the rest of us have been penalized by continuing to print money and these fiscal policies that are out there that are actually hurting every American. Yeah, they artificially inflate the stock market, but if you take the number of dollars that were in circulation in 2007 and compare it to the number of dollars that are in circulation now, right, and you find out what
mm-hmm.
that ratio is, and you apply that
mm-hmm.
same ratio to the stock market, everyone is losing money.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is losing money because so much more money has been printed and put into circulation. Our money's not backed in any commodity. It's simply a function of what we perceive its value to be. But there is some real factors involved in that, number one being how many dollars are in circulation, whether physical or electronic dollars, how many are in circulation. That's the value of a dollar, in theory, is the number of dollars in circulation divided into the value of our economy. That's the value of a dollar. Well,
mm-hmm.
if you're printing more and more and more and more and more and more dollars, and everyone will tell you our economy has not recovered. Ask anybody on the street, man, hey, do you really think the economy's recovered? I mean, do you think it's
no.
really that much better than it was? or is it about the same, or maybe is it a little better, or is it a little worse? People are going to give you that kind of middle ground of, it's a little worse, it's a little better, or it's about the same. That's what the average person will tell you, because that is reality. The reality is that our economy has never recovered. It has not recovered. And that is driving a large amount of this dissatisfaction nationwide, rightfully so. I mean, people are feeling it. James Carville, for my disagreements with him on policy measures, was very, very smart when he said it's the economy, stupid. That, at the end of the day, what people want to know is, am I bringing home a paycheck? Can I buy the stuff I used to buy or that I want to buy or whatever? That's the number one deciding factor in elections and, in general, political satisfaction. And what we're seeing is that, in general, there is political dissatisfaction all across the country. Even in the top 5%, people kind of realize that this is kind of a bogus game. And, I mean, you've got to play the market, sure, but they kind of realized, I would bet that the top 5% even realized that a lot of this is on very shaky ground, that it's not based in anything real, that, you know, you can't just keep bailing out and bailing out and bailing out and expect some sort of growth, that there's going to have to be some sort of fundamental shift where the economy actually recovers. And we could spend an entire show talking about things that would actually help the economy recover, but at the end of the day, these Keynesian politics or policies of, well, let's infuse cash here, let's infuse cash here, let's infuse cash here, has done nothing to help the average citizen and has done everything, especially in the Obama era version of Keynesian of policies, of just infusing money into the government and into bureaucracy. That's where the Obama stimulus went, was into the bureaucracy. It didn't even make it into the real world, and that's the real reason why even Keynes, I think, would disagree with what they've done here, because Keynes was all about pushing money into the economy to get things rolling. But we never did that. We pushed them into the bureaucracy that helped fund increasing regulations, and regulations inherently hurt the economy. Don, we got about a minute left, man. You got anything else? I got to get to the end here.
No, I think we've kind of covered it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Don, for calling in. Folks, and we're here every Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern time. If you're listening to the podcast, thank you. But please, never hesitate to call in. I really do enjoy having callers call in and having the conversation, because I do see this as a conversation. This is not just about me spouting off at you or anything like that. I want to talk about issues, and I think these are very important things, things that need to be vetted, that need to be out there, things that we need to talk about, and talk about solutions and how do we fix these problems. And the more we talk about them and the more they're out there, the more that our politicians and our political class will have to address them. But we're at the end of the show. Folks, thanks for tuning in. You have a good week, and until next time, tune into the other shows during the week, Monday through Thursday, and we'll see you next week. Take care.